Welcome to the Hometown Hero Outdoors Podcast. Here are your hosts, Daniel Meyer and Chris Tatro.
Welcome back to the Hometown Hero Outdoors Podcast. Tonight we've got myself, Chris, our regional director, Sean, and Brandon from Silencer Central on. I'm going to pass it over to Sean to kick us off for the night.
Man, we're so glad to have Mr. Brandon Maddox from Silencer Central here tonight. Brandon, why don't you introduce yourself? Tell us a little bit about you and your family and where you come from.
Yeah, absolutely. So Brandon Maddox, our headquarters for Silencer Central is based in Sioux Falls, South Dakota. My wife is from South Dakota, so that's how we got here. I grew up in the South. My dad was in the Army, so I was born at Fort Rucker. And my dad was an academia, so we kind of traveled wherever he took us. And I went to school in North Carolina, so I did pharmacy and undergrad at Chapel Hill in North Carolina, and then went into the pharmaceutical industry and convinced them to pay for my MBA, and moved out here to South Dakota after spending about 15 years in the pharmaceutical industry. And there's not a whole lot of pharmaceutical industry out in South Dakota, so I figured I better find something else to do. And I'd never really worked as a pharmacist other than keeping my license up, and started prairie dog hunting, and realized that as soon as you shoot the firearm, the prairie dogs are astute enough to realize that that bang is what is typically the end of their life on Earth. And so decided to go down the path of getting a suppressor and using it for prairie dog hunting, fell in love with it, and basically started a business of it and started working events, started working gun shows, farm shows, sportsman shows. Now we have locations in 42 states. So that's all the states where suppressors are legal. The states they're illegal, you can probably guess. It's the dark, dark, dark blue states. But yeah, loving what I'm doing. A lot of people think it's weird I'm a pharmacist. That's why I always bring it up. What my mom makes me put it on my business card since she said she paid for the tuition. So
gotta listen to mom.
Exactly. But other than that, life is good in South Dakota. It's a good place to work, and we're glad we, got a chance to work with you, Sean, when you were in South Carolina, and then when you transitioned to Texas. So it's been fun.
Yeah. So you ended up in South Dakota. Your wonderful wife, Megan, and you have two daughters that keep you very busy in what, cross country and volleyball. Is that right?
Man, you got a good memory. So, it seems like there's two or three events every week, just like probably all you guys have as well. So, it's fun. And then just the silencer business has been busy, so it keeps us hopping. And, really my expertise was just kind of learning the compliance side of it. And it's easier to scale a business when you know legally what you can and cannot do. So that's kind of been our expertise, is just really getting a good understanding on the laws we have to follow at a state and a federal level with suppressors.
Yeah. So down here in De Leon, Texas, a small little one stoplight town, the pharmacy is actually A.J. Hill. He's a combat vet, and he's a pharmacist and a gun dealer. So,
oh, wow. Perfect.
I thought that was a pretty neat connection. I told him about you, and he's like, yeah, wow, two peas in a pod.
Yeah, exactly. I'll have to come through there. Yeah, that's exciting. Because you're not that far from Dallas, right?
No, we're not too far.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
we got a pharmacist running a gun shop. Yeah, I love it.
Yeah, exactly.
Small,
yeah.
The small town Texas life.
Yeah. His motto is drugs and guns.
So, there we go.
Yeah. I love it.
So then how did you and Sean get connected when he was in South Carolina?
It's funny because my recollection is you were originally from North Dakota, right, Sean?
Yes, sir.
And that was my second location. So South Dakota was our first location. And one time we worked a gun show up in Aberdeen, and I was like, man, everyone at the Aberdeen gun show is from North Dakota, and I can't sell to them because I don't have a license in North Dakota. And I got a license up in Carrington, North Dakota. And then not too far from I think where Sean was from, but we had a guy at that time that was working with us that was also from North Dakota. And I said, anyone that lives in South Carolina? He said, actually, I do. And I think he'd be a great fit. He's a gun guy and he's in the military and he's a recruiter. So he probably could help us sell a little bit. give this guy a call and see what you think. Yeah. And it worked out. Boy, Sean had a lot of questions, man. And when I told him we were meeting with the ATF, and you know, he's like, all right, we're going to have to get ready for this and get prepared and make sure we know what's going on here, which was perfect.
Yeah. I mentioned it to my wife. I was like, hey, ATF agent's coming over tomorrow. And she's like, well, what? Excuse me? What'd you do now? That was her first. It's been great.
No lead in.
And that was a fun meeting with that guy from the ATF in South Carolina. I mean, he's very knowledgeable about the industry and just, you know, one of the few you meet that's personable, kind of knows all the industry from a user perspective as well. So that was cool.
Yeah. You know, that was a great meeting to sit in and listen to y'all conversate, you know, because of your expert knowledge of all the NFA rules and paperwork and how that operates. You know, he already knew who you were, you know, sitting back and so from that point, that's where I was sold on Brandon Maddox as this guy knows what he's doing.
And it's always tough with ATF because you want them to know, you know, what you're doing, but you don't want them to think that you're trying. Because, I mean, it sounds hard to believe, but in a lot of cases, because our area is so specific, we typically, you know, I'll know more than they do about that particular area because it's not something they do as often. So it's always a touchy, you know, to try to talk to them and let them know. I think they're typically impressed that I usually go to every compliance meeting there is and I sit on the front row. So I know the people they get emails and voicemails from that they never met, which they always think is pretty cool.
Yeah.
I got a question. So going from South Carolina. No, wait, sorry. Yeah, South Carolina?
North Carolina.
Yeah. Moving to North Dakota, doing your prairie dog hunting, and you start getting the suppressor, and you're like, these things are damn cool. And then you get into that business. Like, what did that look like when you first started that? Like, what piqued your interest about learning how suppressors work and then getting into building them on your own?
Yeah, good question. So oddly enough, my father-in-law, who's also a pharmacist, he has a federal farms license in his pharmacy. And when I first started prairie dog hunting, he was buying everything for me at wholesale price and shipping it to me like an hour north. And I honestly felt guilty. I'm like, poor guy is like, you know, really getting all these things for me through his federal farms license, just being too nice. And I thought, gosh, the first two suppressors I bought, the process was horrible. And the gun store warned me. They just said, hey, it's a horrible process. You're not going to want to buy one. You know, are you sure you want to do this? And they were right. It was a horrible process. So after the first two, I told my wife, I need to get a federal firearms license myself, figure out the paperwork and do it from our house just because I can't handle the local gun store. And again, I'm not bashing them. They were honest up front that this is not our wheelhouse and we suck at it. And we're going to do a lot of stuff wrong. And, you know, it's going to be awkward. But, once I got my third one, I decided to do it myself. And when I did the process, I was like, gosh, there's so many things that they thought had to go a certain way that they were wrong on that would be easy to kind of fine tune it just by doing a little research and finding how to actually do it instead of what they thought was the right way to do it. And then my first job out of pharmacy school was pharmaceutical sales. So I had a lot of sales experience. And then I did like move my way up in the corporation into like an executive role in marketing. So I kind of really understood that. And the first time I set up a booth at a gun show, we were the busiest booth. And I was literally, the Sioux Falls Gun Show is extremely popular. It's impossible to get a booth, especially when you talk Southern when I first moved here and they're all from, you know, the Dakotas. So they gave me a booth size that was, you know, maybe 3 feet long off of somebody else's booth. And I had two used silencers there and some business cards. And I literally had the busiest booth. Like they asked me to go to another location where I could keep that from blocking, the lanes there. I got to just tell them like this. Yeah. There's like a huge interest in suppressors. Like people are like, how do you put it on your gun? And how do I own this? And can other people use it? And does the sheriff have to approve it? Do I have to be fingerprinted? It was just like, you know, firing questions. When they're like, gosh, the guy knows the answers to these. This is pretty interesting. And a lot of the people in the Dakotas shoot coyotes. So, you know, the question I would always ask at the gun show is, if you call in three coyotes, how many of them do you want to shoot? And the answer is always four. So, you know, the ability.
I love it.
So the ability to keep it quiet while you're shooting them, it sold people, and then making the process easy for them too sold them. So, I mean, it just made me excited. I mean, I had a good day job. I was a regional manager for a pharma company and I managed a big geography but just to be able to help people get into suppressors, it's always fun when people have never shot one and then they get it and then they hunt with it and they call you up and go, man, I don't know why I didn't do this 20 years ago.
Yeah, I need to get some myself. What did it look like when you first started doing your research into building them, though? Like,
you know, good question.
What they are.
Yeah, good question. So I'm not an engineer, and that's just not my wheelhouse. So honestly, it made me really nervous. I'll tell you my insight. So my insight working the gun shows in the Dakotas is everyone out there was a hunter. And when I looked at all the products that were available to be sold, they were all more kind of a tactical setup, or, you know, it felt more like an AR. It looked like a good marriage between screwing it on an AR that it just didn't look like a hunting type silencer. And the other thing is most of the suppressors in those days were all stainless steel. It was just too much weight on the end of the barrel for a hunter. So I remember I was working at a gun show in Pierce, South Dakota, and it just hit me like, you know, just like someone hit me upside the head. And basically what the customer was telling me was, we love the idea of making it quiet, but what you're selling is not what we want. And I was like, all right, I got to go down a path of finding something that's light and also it's quiet. We also realized that probably about 30% of people want to take them apart and clean them. And nothing at that time came apart to clean unless it was, you know, more of a rim fire where you get the lead buildup from a rim fire. So what I did is I approached another manufacturer and just said, hey, you know, could you take this model of suppressors you're making and put my name on them and I'll sell them. And they were lighter. They were all titanium and they met some of the requirements we had. And they were based out of Georgia. You know, that went well for a while, but then we started selling so many they couldn't really keep up. And I started wanting to give like feedback on ways I wanted to improve it. And I wanted it to be able to handle higher calibers. Like in North Dakota, people shoot, you know, rum and, you know, things you don't hear as much about in the South. So he wasn't too interested in that. But I was just working a gun show in Rapid City, South Dakota. It's always in April. Two guys come up to me and they ran a machine shop. And only thing they make are firearms and firearms parts. They make for like GA Precision, Badger Ordnance. They make they have a lot of military contracts. That's all they do are firearms. And they said, hey, have you ever thought about, you know, hiring someone in the state to make suppressors for you? And I'm like, yeah, I've X-rayed every suppressor on the market. I have a military grade sound meter. I've tested everything. I know the weights I want them. I've got some design ideas, but it's just not me. And I gave it to them. And literally like within a month and a half later, they came back with some really great designs. And it just became a kind of a partnership with them ever since, of them making them. And then we would pay them for the, you know, their R&D time and pay them some intellectual property. And then the benefit to them is they got to make silencers for us. So that's kind of how it started. So we really outsource 100%, let the experts, that's our expertise. We kind of go to them and say, hey, the customer wants it light because they're going to hunt with it. Customer typically wants to be able to take it apart. And I say, here's the quietest one on the market. We need it to be as quiet as this one or quieter, because hunters want it really, really quiet. Tactical side, typically their goal is hearing safe. Hunting side is typically they want it like crazy quiet. So that's always been our goal, is how do we make it quieter and lighter? So that's how I kind of started. And it's just kind of evolved from there.
No, that's cool. Thanks for sharing. No, that's I've always been very intrigued in how they work and the dynamics and the, you know, the internal components and everything. And it's just very fascinating to have people have the knowledge and the expertise on how that has progressed over the years.
Yeah. And you know, what's interesting is, and a lot of it too, is trial and error. Like you think, well, people say, well, would they use fluid dynamic machines, or there's all these different ways to look at air pressure. And, you know, we found, gosh, it's just trial and error. Sometimes the blast chamber is shorter, longer, you know, more baffles, less baffles. It's just kind of trial and error, a lot of time involved, but it's an interesting science. It's cool.
Yeah. And it's great that it's made in made right there in South Dakota.
Yeah, absolutely. Totally.
Yeah. And the progression from listening to, you know, the customer feedback is huge. You know, there's a lot of companies out there that don't really pay attention to what the customers are saying and just keep their same product, and they accept losing some people because of it. But, you know, you're really taking the customer forward approach with what you're making.
No, good point, because really that's where we evolved into making the process simple. So my insight, you know, most manufacturers don't talk to customers that much, like you said. But for me, working gun shows for, gosh, almost the whole first 15 years, that's what I did, is worked every show. It was too expensive for me to stay home because we just couldn't sell enough if I wasn't there, just because I knew the market so well. But listening to that customer at the booth, like getting that real-time feedback, I found that people want the process to be simple. And if you make the process simple of buying a suppressor, the next question they ask typically is, how do we get started?
No, that's
right.
Go ahead, Sean.
So just like you took all that input from all your customers, like that's what we do with the with our Hometown Hero Outdoors members. So we just recently purchased two Banished 30s that we use on 7.62x39s down here in Texas. And I take our members out hog hunting, and some of them have never, ever had a suppressor before. And by the time they're done, they're asking for the phone number. You know, they want a suppressor. We do a lot of youth hunts, and it's amazing to see that the kids are scared at first because they've shot weapons before. And once you put a suppressor on the end of it, you can't get them off the trigger, you know? So, it's a lot of fun.
So when it comes to those products, you know, we actually did a podcast not too long ago with Melissa Bachman.
Oh, yeah.
We were talking to her about the product and stuff like that. So, you know, a common misconception, it sounds like, that people feel that some of the suppressors have to have a standard caliber that goes with that. But it sounds like they're somewhat interchangeable with what Silencer Central produces, right? So you can – each one has a certain dynamic of calibers that they can use. Is that accurate?
Yeah, absolutely. You're right. It's a big misconception. So sometimes people don't jump into the silencer game because – you know, they look in their safe and they're like, gosh, I've got, you know, 12 to 15 calibers in here. I don't want to have to buy, you know, I'm afraid I'll like a suppressor and I got to buy one for every one. And they just kind of, that whole kind of locks them down. But,
right,
you know, what we found is, you know, like I said, when I first started like 18 years ago, everything was stainless steel. So no one really thought about this idea of putting a 30 caliber suppressor on a 223, it would just be too heavy, just too much weight on the end. But then when we started focusing on, you know, 100% titanium 30 cal, then people were like, wow, this works perfect on my 223 and even my 243 and 270 and, you know, 308 and 6.5 and 300 Win Mag. People love that idea of a multi-caliber suppressor. And I would say that, you know, the Banish 30 is definitely our number one seller. People love that idea of buying it for every center fire they own. You can even use it on rim fire. So, you know, and then sometimes if they start using them and they really, really like them, then they might get one they dedicate and just leave on a rifle. But most people typically buy one and use it on all their center fires and love it.
Yeah, I know that. And a lot of people, like you just said, like, oh, I got all these different calibers, you know, and I'm gonna be broke by the time I buy suppressors for each one of these. But I mean, the availability to be able to change out what you have on your firearm and use them in between. And what was the term you used? You said multi-caliber.
Yeah, multi-caliber.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the best way to explain it, which I think, you know, is pretty beneficial overall if you're an outdoors enthusiast with a different firearm and you want to try a suppressor on different firearms. So transition a little bit. We got to come out for your guys' opening at your new headquarters. So that was pretty phenomenal. That was really cool.
Thanks for coming. Yeah, that's.
Yeah. So you guys, I appreciate the invite. It was a good time. Got to hang out with Sean over there, you know, and that's always a good time. Got to meet some really cool people, make some good connections. But so could you just walk us through, like, what did you guys have before that? And what was the cause or the need for the change in getting the new facility and what that facility looks like?
Yeah. So Silencer Central, you know, when I first started, I used to do everything for my house. So people would typically buy at a show, and a lot of the shows in South Dakota were close enough to Sioux Falls where they would come to my house to do like the kind of final paperwork and transfer. You know, it got to the point where people would come to Sioux Falls, the biggest city in the state. So you would catch them in town at some point so you could give them their suppressor, finish up the paperwork. It got to a point where I got so busy and, you know, customers would tell you they're coming at 7:00, it'd be 8:00 at night or 9:00. And you're like, all right, when do I assume they're not coming? And I could just tell it was bothering my wife. We had more people coming in and out of our front door to pick up suppressors. So
yeah, that's tough.
Yeah, I finally told my wife, I'm like, all right, I get it. And I wasn't worried about safety. Everyone was great customers. It was fun. But it's just the hard part, too, is we weren't here during the day. And so when it's like firearms were being shipped here, you have to sign for them. And then I have to go to UPS every night. And so eventually I bought a one room place that, and it was honestly, the whole goal was for me to hire a full-time employee to help me answer the phones, take orders, and just sort of facilitate those transfers while I was at my day job. And then we transitioned from there to we bought an office building, and I bought it before the election, right before we didn't know who it was going to be, if it was going to be, you know, like Trump or Hillary or, you know, and so of course everyone's like, well, why don't you wait and see? And I'm like, well, then it'll be too late. And so anyway, we bought an office building. It was 7,500 square feet. It didn't take long till we outgrew that. I bought the office building next door, another 7,500 square feet, bought it. And we just basically stored suppressors there. And then I have a couple warehouses not too far from our headquarters that we use to thread barrels. So a big business for us is, you know, people say, hey, how do I get the suppressor on the end of the barrel? And we just say, hey, how about we send you an empty gun case for your rifle, put your rifle in there. We'll pay the postage to us. We'll thread it. And then we ship it back to you. And the problem with the office buildings was that it wasn't zoned properly for any type of machinery, or and they considered it kind of manufacturing. And it just became logistically difficult for someone to drop rifles off and then for us to have to drive them, you know, 15, 20 minutes away to thread every day. I mean, we did it for years. I just knew that at some point I needed to get office space, I needed to get warehouse space, and I needed to be able to do manufacturing and kind of have all those under one roof. And just from a city zoning perspective, it's so difficult to get that. Oddly enough, I was on a realtor website looking for a lot. My wife wanted to build a house. So I was like, all right, I'll look for lots. And I found the Cigna Teldrug. It was a mail order pharmacy building for sale. And the thing that I sometimes forget to tell people is that was where my first job was when I moved to South Dakota. I told my wife that I could apply there, but there would be no reason why they would hire me as the chief pharmacist because I've never filled a prescription in my life. But I think they liked the fact that I was registered as a pharmacist in a lot of states and they were mailing meds all over the country. So I don't know why, but they hired me. And I knew the building really well. It had 10,000 square feet of space where we could store suppressors, two stories worth. And then, you know, it had about 35,000 square feet of office space. And because it was in outside of an industrial park over by the airport, there was the ability from a zoning perspective to put a machine shop in there so that we can take the rifles apart and thread them and, you know, just do all of it underneath one roof. You know, I feel like I got a good price. It was during COVID. And what's interesting is I'd already bought land. We were planning on building a new building and we were going to build this warehouse and everything. But what I liked about this building was the warehouse was already inside the concrete walls. And if I went and built a warehouse, typically you think of like a kind of a pole barn or a metal building hooked to a concrete building. And it just, I was afraid aesthetically it may not look good. But we bought the building as is. I mean, it was like 20 years old. We gutted the whole thing. We just basically tore everything out. I mean, there was phone lines in the ceilings that the copper wire, there's no telling what they got in, you know, refunds when they took that in to recycle it. It was in the price of the electrical work that they knew they were going to get a huge rebate. They just took big, just drums full of, you know, copper wire because of all the phone lines. It used to be a call center for the pharmacy. We gutted the whole building. It took, you know, about a year and a half. The analogy I use is it's sort of like living in your kitchen and they remodel the house around you. But what was great is we had a ton of storage there. We right now, we keep $100 million worth of suppressors on the shelf. So we have enough room to store all that inside. So when we get compliance inspections, they can come in and look at everything. We have about 100 employees in there. So we got plenty of office space, plenty of places for meetings. And then we got our machine shop in there. So we have a full-time gunsmith that takes the rifles apart. And right behind him is a full-time machinist who's just threading barrels. So it's worked out really, really well. We've kind of grown into the space. And, you know, we got some extra space for growth, too. And it's on 12 acres, so it's really a campus. We have an extra 4.5 acres on the side where one day we look at maybe adding a gun range and stuff like that, or maybe even some manufacturing facilities if we needed to. So, yeah, it's been a great move. I mean, the downside is it's further away from kind of the residential side of Sioux Falls where we might have made more sales. But the reality is probably 97% of our sales are on the phone and on the web. So you don't get as much walk-in traffic in, you know, South Dakota when you have a, you know, a business that serves the whole country.
Yeah, I know when Chris and I stopped up, that machine room, I tell people it looks like a operating room in a hospital. It's just beautiful.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, it's because of that cutting fluid, and this is outside of my wheelhouse, but I was always educated that cutting fluid on those CNC machines can really permeate into your sheetrock and into your carpet. So that entire machine shop is sealed off. It's got its own HVAC unit. It's, you know, it's made where that nothing really leaves there from an airflow perspective or smell. So it's worked out great. I mean, one reason why I picked the builder who did the remodel is he told me, he said, "Hey, I bought a silencer from you and didn't even know you threaded barrels." And so you put a big window there so you can almost, it looks like the Krispy Kreme, watch your donuts get made kind of thing. So
I think it's awesome. It's brilliant. You know, you get to see the process and, you know, and you said it's a 20-year-old building, and when you walk in, you have no idea it's 20 years.
No, absolutely not. No, today no. Today I gave a tour of law enforcement. So we had the sheriff and also the chief of police and then kind of their people that report to them. So I had, you know, a team of five there, and they were all like, "Wow, I'm in shock that this building was built, you know, this long ago. It looks brand new." And we did gut everything, essentially, but the walls. And I'm glad we did. It turned out really nice. I mean, with the inflation, it's actually helped that, you know, because in the beginning when you started, the bank always says you're going to end up putting more money in it than it's worth. But because we got it at a pretty good price, and we've done the repairs during sort of this increase in inflation over the last 2 years, I mean, we're kind of breaking even. I mean, not that we want to sell it, but it feels better than, you know, thinking you put more into it than it's worth.
And it just flows really nice too. You know, you got that nice area that you walk into. You got the CNC to the left, and you got the big TV screen to the front. And it's just welcoming. And then everyone in there is so nice. Like, just to be able to walk you through the building, give you a quick little tour, and to go back and see what did you guys call? So all the suppressors that are back there in the cage, did you call it ATF jail?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's definitely ATM jail. Yeah, it's sitting in there.
I mean, just stacks and stacks of suppressors just waiting to get cleared. But speaking of the ATF, too, is didn't you guys have a lot of pretty close relationship and work with the ATF to streamline that process?
Yeah, you know, it's always a tough discussion, because I think that customers, when they hear ATF, they have a real negative perception, and they kind of think, "Gosh, why would you try to work with them?" You know, I came that, you know, like I said, being in pharmacy, I realized that, you know, in that area it was the DA's in charge, the State Board of Pharmacy, you know, you got rules you got to follow. The hard part with the ATF is the NFA laws that regulate suppressors were written in, you know, the 30s, and the regular firearms part was written in the 80s. So a lot of that stuff wasn't around, you know, there was no digital, there was no fax. So typically what we've done is just sit down with the ATF and said, "Hey, here's how we want to do it. What's your perception of how we need to do this to make sure we're in compliance?" And then once we get a clear sight of that, we know we're doing things the right way that they want. They appreciate that open communication. On a lot of occasions, we've gone to them and said, "Hey, here's what the statutes say to do it from a paper perspective. We feel like we could be more accurate with a digital perspective doing it this way. It would make it easier for you to inspect us digitally when you come in. Instead of having to go through all the paperwork, you could go through it digitally." And we just talked to them about, "Hey, this doesn't conflict with federal law, what we want to do, and it makes your job easier, and it helps the customer. And it creates a discussion, and we're able to change processes." You know, I did that with the ATF. I had one that took 4 years to get approved, but it got approved, and I've had some that I got approved in a few months. So it just shows that, you know, we respect that they get to interpret the rules. They're kind of in charge, unfortunately. We don't mind giving them pushback if we feel like they're outside the guidelines or they have a poor interpretation. But, you know, just kind of working with them on, "Hey, how can we do this where we're in compliance and it makes you all feel comfortable about it?" But we have every variance we have for our operations, you have to apply for it at each location. So with 42 locations, I mean, we got several hundred variances. There's probably five unique ones, but a lot of them, it's not like we have some kind of special clearance or other dealers think we have some kind of advantage. It's just, we sat down with the ATF and said, "Hey, here's how we would like to do it." And then they issue a variance if they approve it. And then you have to keep a copy of that variance in your records there. And we just have to make sure we follow it exactly. And they inspect it when they come and inspect us to make sure we're following it. So it's worked out really well. I mean, I would say that process of working with them to help them understand our process and then asking them to work with us for ways to enhance it has helped my understanding of the way the ATF thinks about things. So now I can typically, if I hear something come up, I'll typically know the backstory as to why it happened or how it happened, because now I know how they think. I know what their priorities are. I know what they're looking for. I know what they want to make sure doesn't happen. So it's really helped me. Like I think I might have said in the beginning, it's hard to scale a business unless you know what the rules are. So that's why I really dove in. I hired someone to come in and sort of inspect all of our paperwork, and he spent 2 days at my house, and it was just an excellent experience to realize what I wasn't doing right, what I needed to do better, and then just doing a deep dive and committing to making sure we do everything right and make sure we knew what the rules were.
Yeah, and going back to one of the conversations that we had earlier on is, you know, when you went in to buy your first suppressor, the store was like, hey, this is going to be the most difficult thing you've ever done, basically. Like, don't even try if you don't want to go for the ride.
100%.
And be, you know, kind of serving on the advisory board is, you know, what your website says about, you know, what you guys do with ATF and influencing kind of the regulations and really understand them helps simplify the process. So that way, when people come to the dealers like Sean and ask the questions, you're really able to explain it to them and actually make the process probably way smoother than anyone else has ever experienced when going through this.
And I honestly, I do find that's the biggest question a customer has when they come to our booths at events. 100% of the time, once they realize we've got the process nailed down and we understand it and we're following the rules and we're going to make sure they follow the rules, it's just like a light clicks and they're like, all right, how do I get started? That's the main thing. They want to make sure that we got it 100% nailed down and we're going to do it right and no one's going to do anything that's going to get anyone in trouble. And they're like, gosh, you guys have been doing this since 2005. Let's jump in.
And which has led to, congratulations, Brandon, on Inc. 500, America's fastest growing companies, right?
You know, absolutely. Yeah. You know, in the past we hadn't applied for it cause we just didn't know. Do we want everyone to know we're doing well? but then, you know, I feel like it does help sales because when you hear silencers, you know, you kind of think back alley, you know, a trunks pop up, you know, it's after dark. And so that's people's sort of perception to sort of kind of beat that perception and give it a trust and make people realize we're a legit business. We decided to apply for it and we were the fastest growing company in Sioux Falls and one of the fastest growing in South Dakota and one of the fastest growing in the nation. So,
you know, I saw that pop up on Elizabeth's email today and I was like, that wasn't there when we talked before. Where'd that come from?
Exactly. Yeah. No, cool. It's fun. I mean, it sets the bar higher for next year. So I've brought other business leaders in. There's a guy in town that's been on it 7 years. So I don't know right or wrong. I gave him the floor to tell our team, how do we keep, you know, get on there year two, year three. And I think it was beneficial. He had a lot of good ideas. So, no, it's fun. It's, I think everyone wants to work somewhere where they feel like they're making a difference and potentially maybe something that I have a hobby in, and then they feel like it's growing and it's being recognized. It's, you know, it's been exciting.
Oh, that is cool. Congratulations on that.
Yeah. Speaking of your employees, you know, I've worked a few events to help out with the guys as they travel around in Texas shows. And let me tell you, they are the most knowledgeable people. I don't know how somebody knows that much about a certain product. I guarantee you there's not a car salesman out there that knows that much about a Chevy truck. I don't know what y'all do, but you have some really great employees that are very knowledgeable.
No, thanks. I mean, I think that people don't realize, you know, when you have a call center, you're getting thousands of calls in a day and you're just getting pounded all day long. And then I did it just from working shows for so long. There's almost like no question I haven't heard. And you just get more confident after you talk about it more. So that's good feedback.
So Brandon, tell me some of the, there's been some, you've been, visited some people with your product with the Banish line and they've tried to cook them down. Hitchcock 45 comes to mind, but you've turned around to some different people. Tell me some of those experiences.
You know, yesterday I went down to Nashville and we shot with this guy named 22 Plinkster, super nice guy. He's sponsored by Federal, and you know we work with Federal just because we do a lot of live events, and they've been kind enough to sponsor us and help us with the ammunition at those events. And my offer to them was, hey, some of the people that you have as your ambassadors, influencers, whatever you want to call them, I was like, I'd like to give them suppressors just so that kind of repay you guys for being so nice with the ammo. So we went down there yesterday and. He definitely loved what the unique thing I have is I have a lot of machine guns. Just over the years, I've sort of collected them. You know, you meet people at shows and over the years, I've My wife doesn't know, but I got safes full of machine guns, and
we'll edit that part out for you. Don't worry.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, no, I called 22 Plinkster, and I was like, man, I've got a machine gun that's got a drum on the top, and it shoots 22, which is these 22 Plinkster. I was like, how many views do you think you could get on a video if you were to produce it, make it? He's like, Brandon, I assure you, I can get 1 million views in the last 3 or 4 months of this year if we create that video. And I'm like, all right, I'm going to hop on a plane. I'm going to bring the gun down there and let's make it happen. So we did that yesterday. So it was fun.
Did you throw a suppressor on it and everything?
Oh yeah, for sure. Totally. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. You know, I basically took everything to make sure we were 100% ready, but I could tell he didn't really want us to leave. He loved playing with that. I think it's like 1,000 rounds a minute. I mean, it's insane the speed that it goes through. Yeah.
That'll be
fun for you. Yeah. That'll be cool. No, that's and that was 22 Plinkster, you said?
Yeah. Yeah. He sent me the link to it tonight. I don't think he's made it live, but it's pretty amazing. I mean, the guy is a shooter. He was shooting skeet with this 22. I mean, he could do it with his pistol, all the time, but it was a little bit harder with the machine gun. But yeah, he was shooting skeet with it.
That's pretty awesome. So I got a quick question too. So process wise, I know Olsberg helps out, what's your official title there, Sean? I still haven't figured that out.
I am an area manager.
Manager. All right. So what does that look like? What does it look like when people start the process? Why is Sean an area manager? What is his role? And like, what are you doing to help connect people with the product?
So what I do, the way that the structure, this company is structured, is that we can ship to your door all your suppressors. So whatever when you order it through the company, then it'll come through the FFL in that state, and then that state ships it to your door. And that's my role in Texas, is I take care of all the Texans that order suppressors.
Yeah, so basically, you know, to have all these locations across the country, the ATF wanted to make sure that, you know, we had a full-time, you know, employee, W-2 employee there. And we had someone that, you know, checks and sort of manages the paperwork. So we do what I would say is, like, in South Dakota, we do all the paperwork on the front end. So what I would call all the NFA paperwork. We collect your fingerprints. We send you all the paperwork to get done digitally. We organize it all. Then we upload it up to the ATF digitally because they now have e-forms. And then once it comes back approved, then it sort of transitions over to Sean's world. And he does the back-end paperwork to make sure it's all buttoned down in Texas for that Texas resident. And then what we do is we ship that suppressor from South Dakota, our headquarters, to Texas, and then he ships it from his location to where they live. So basically, you know, it's sort of like a handgun. So you can't buy a handgun in a state unless you're a legal resident of that state. So all the paperwork for Texas flows through his world, and then it's actually stored there at our location there. So he's an employee of ours. You know, we call him like our location manager for Texas. He's our busiest guy in the entire country. You know, I sometimes feel sorry for him. You know, we can send out 300 suppressors a day just based on our current, you know, flow we have going for as employees. And there's some days like half of those go to him. Poor guy.
Yeah, I don't ever feel sorry for Sean. No. he does it to himself.
Yeah,
it's okay. No, he's a good guy, and he makes things happen. So you take that. And Sean, I remember you telling me when we were at HQ there in Sioux Falls that there's times where the suppressors will make it to you, and then there has to be another local background check that is completed by local law enforcement real quick before they obtain that. Is that accurate?
We just have to send it. So the way the federal statutes are written is because we background checks have already been done by the ATF and FBI before they send the approval to us. And since the background checks already been done, we don't have to do one in Texas, but we do have to send a notification to their local sheriff that's coming. So Sean gets to sort of facilitate that, where the paperwork gets sent to the local sheriff. If the sheriff, you know, typically they're not involved, but if for some reason they looked at that paperwork and said, this person would be prohibited from owning this, then they would call ATF, and then ATF would intervene. You know, like, of all the ones we've ever done, I've never seen that happen. It's just more of a process protocol.
Okay. Yeah. So like if something happened between maybe a background and,
yes,
good point, and when they got it.
Yeah.
Just to make sure there's nothing current or active that's going on.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. 100%.
Well, that makes sense.
And that's then how's the process work for someone, you know, say, you know, they listen to this podcast and they're like, hey, I want to go buy a silencer from them. And they go online. So is their first step to go online, or is their first step to try to get a hold of you guys via phone?
Good question. Yeah, good question. So, you know, obviously I would say almost everyone goes to silencercentral.com, kind of looks around. But then really what the best process is, just call in. I mean, we got a whole call center. And just to ask questions, doesn't mean you have to buy anything. Just call and just see what you think. Our experience is that the person that calls in typically creates a relationship with the person they talk to. And then as they're going through the process, they have someone to call or email, or if, you know, if they have any questions, they kind of feel like they have someone internally at the mothership that can kind of help them. And we always find they get a better experience. You know, what we've done now is if you buy online, we end up calling anyway, just so you have that connection, because it really helps people's experience going through the process to know they have a person there specifically that they can talk to and make sure everything's being handled. But yeah, people typically call us. They'll ask a lot of questions. You know, we give away a free gun trust. So a lot of people are like, what does that mean? And why would I want that? And then, you know, we basically tell you how to get your fingerprints done at home by yourself. We send you ink and you just have to do your fingerprints. And I always say it must be easy because I never hear any complaints about it. And then we scan that in digitally. We keep it on file. So if you want to buy more later, we have that. A lot of people don't understand the whole multi-caliber, you know, what could I use a suppressor on and how do I get my barrel threaded? We answer all those questions. And then typically we'll ask, you know, what calibers are you trying to cover? Maybe what is your goal? Is it just for a 223 or just a 308? And then people have process questions like, how long is it going to take once I submit it? And you know, how are you going to get it to me once it's approved? You know, we answer those questions about how we, you know, facilitate, like through what Sean said, where we can mail it to you once it's approved. But yeah, it seems like the best way is just to call in and just ask whatever questions are in your head. I mean, the website does an excellent job answering all the questions, and if someone feels comfortable, you know, they can just jump right on the website and buy one. But I still recommend, hey, just call and call. Yeah, just I sense that people like to talk to someone because then they feel like, all right, this is legit. This is a real deal. This is a big building. This is a big business. They're really buttoned down. It just gives them an extra level of confidence.
Yeah, they're not spending their hard-earned money on something that's going to end up being a scam or something like that.
Well, yeah, nothing drives you nuts like punching all these buttons in a phone trying to get to, you know, these robot answers. You're like, I just want to talk to someone, damn it. You know, like,
yeah, totally.
That drives me nuts.
And these sales folks, I mean, they know their product. And when it comes to having different, you know, different rails, different threads, different pitches, and they know all that stuff. So if you're just buying it online, sometimes you don't know exactly what you need. And those salesmen, they know exactly what you need and they'll make sure you get it.
And then you brought up the, you know, people have the question a lot of what's the wait time look like?
Yeah.
You know, from doing the tax stamp, getting, you know, basically from the time they make their purchase to getting the silencer at their doorstep. What's the typical time frame that you guys are looking at?
Boy, you know, that's always a tough one. So when I first started doing this, believe it or not, it took 2 weeks. There was just no volume, no demand. You'd send it in. I don't even think they opened the letter that quick when you send them paper. But so here's the confusing and the hard part. So December 23rd of 2021, they went to an all-digital process. And here's where it gets confusing. They had about 200,000 applications that had been mailed in paper that were sitting kind of in file drawers to be worked. So when the digital system got started, the hope was that it would be 90-day turnarounds, that because it's digital, it's easier to approve, it's all automated, it checks for any errors so that it's a whole lot quicker process. But what happened was ATF is so busy focused on approving all these paper forms that accumulated during the pandemic that they haven't been working the digital forms like they thought they would. Long story short is by the end of 2022, the ATF is in hopes of cleaning out all the paper forms that came in before they went live with e-forms. The unfortunate part is those right now on paper are 18 to 20 months is how long they've been waiting. Now, if you transition over to digital, right now they're approving small numbers because they don't have that many people working the digital. They're all still working paper. But right now we're seeing about 6 months on digital. But my assumption is that when all these employees that are working on paper, when they flush that out in, you know, probably the next 6 weeks, 4 to 6 weeks, they're going to then focus solely on digital. And they've always said that, you know, 90 to 120 days is where they should be from a digital perspective. So it, you know, when the digital goes live, it'll end up being, as you know, one of the quickest times it's been in the last 10 years of getting them is going through the digital. Cause even if you can get it, you know, in 90 days, that's quick. And so it doesn't take long on the paperwork side. The biggest thing that slows us up is just getting your fingerprints. So we'll mail you a card, we'll mail you ink. You just roll them yourself. We give you a YouTube video that tells you how to do it. You mail them to us. We scan them in. We convert them to the format the FBI wants. We upload that. We create a free gun trust for you. We upload that. We send you the paperwork to do like just the, you know, the digital signature that you would do through like a DocuSign. We print that out and scan it and upload it into the ATF system. And so once we submit it to them, it just kind of sits there until they get to it. But I do think the process, I mean, they're telling us how much quicker it is for them to approve the digital ones because there are no errors and they don't have to touch it. It's very quick. So I think we're going to see it increase. The honest truth is the hard part with this market is as the timelines go down, demand goes up, and then they end up kind of intersecting again. You know, when silencers first became legal in Minnesota, it was a short wait. It was like, you know, it was that 3 months, which wasn't too bad. And then as soon as everyone got theirs approved, then they were ready for another one. But then in Iowa, it got approved later. And it was during the Obama time when he was making some changes to the silencer laws. And it went up to like a 2-year wait. And after a new customer in Iowa waited 2 years, they weren't interested in getting another one afterwards. So it just, you know, it just seems like that as those wait times go down, then the actual time that, you know, amount people want to buy, the demand goes up. So we're optimistic digital is going to prove it.
No, I hope so. I hope so. Yeah. I mean, I got to get Sean to help me out, but my plan is to get one here soon. You know, and I think it's kind of interesting too, because with the law changes and whatnot and being able to use them in Minnesota, I still have yet to check anyone that's out hunting that has one. Like I'm surprised that I haven't seen it yet. I just don't know if it just hasn't caught on or people are concerned or worried, but I have still yet to check anyone who's been using a suppressor while hunting.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. And we, you know, always felt like I sold more pistol ones there. Just because there was a lot of shotgun shooters there in Minnesota, it seemed like in the bigger populated areas it was mostly shotgun hunting, but yeah, hopefully it continues to catch on. The other hard part is it just takes a while for people to realize they're legal. Interesting thing about North Dakota was Sean, like the first place that there was a class 3 store in the state of North Dakota was in Minot, and that area in Minot, we always sell more suppressors. We work shows there because there's just more awareness. There's been stores there for years and people kind of know the benefits, and it's just kind of permeated for a longer period of time. That's why Texas is great. So many people there are using them that most people, when they look at getting one, they have a buddy that already has one.
I know my dad was one of your first customers with Dakota Silencer. I remember him being so excited waiting for that to come in, and he went and he might have drove to South Dakota to pick it up. I don't know. But it was, yeah, he cherishes that Dakota Silencer.
Yeah, exactly. Yep.
Yeah. And Dakota was the former company name, right, before you rebranded?
You know, it's even went back further than that, believe it or not. So when I first started, it was South Dakota Silencer.
Okay.
And then I opened up North Dakota Silencer. So I kind of had two names, which didn't make sense. I mean, two business cards, two websites, two brochures. And then I moved to Dakota County, Nebraska. So I said, Dakota Silencer sounds good because I got North Dakota, South Dakota, and then Dakota County. You know, then people like, here's what happened. Like I went to like shows in Wisconsin. Like, you know, if you go to Minnesota, a lot of people like to come here and hunt. If you go to Nebraska, so everyone's very familiar in the kind of the bordering states about the Dakotas. I think they liked the Dakota name. It kind of fit the hunting and, you know, sort of the backwoods outdoors. But I would say when I started to get further northeast, like more up into like Wisconsin, they would look at you and they'd be like, okay, Dakota, like you could just tell they're wondering like, why are you here? And you know, there was more questions about who are you than talking about suppressors. So, you know, I spent a fair amount of time like getting a domain name. Silencer Central was hard to get because other people had tried to get it and had to buy that. And then I had to trademark it. So it's kind of a 2-year process. back then too, Dakota Arms, which was owned by Remington, they were based in Sturgis. They had trademarked in the 70s the word Dakota with anything firearms related. So I was never going to be able to get a true trademark for Dakota Silencer. And once Remington bought them, I thought, well, I don't want to knock at the door one day, you know, 10 years from now from Remington saying, hey, we're gonna take your name or whatever. So that's when I was like, let's come up with a name that sounds bigger. And Silencer Central just sounded great, you know, centrally located and kind of sounds bigger, like covers the whole country. So it's been great. You know, and using the word silencer, when people do Google search for silencer, just having it in your name, it just automatically rises you higher up in the search engine. So
no, that's smart. That's smart. Are you familiar with the company out there? I think they're in Sturgis, is Defiant Munitions.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. Yeah. Yeah. Pete Pie.
Yeah. I buy a lot of ammunition from him, and Best Defense Army and Range here in Forest Lake that we utilize quite a bit. They do a lot of business with him, and he does some good work out there. I was talking to Melissa about him, and I don't think she knew about him, but I was like, man, you got to go check it out. He's got some good stuff.
Oh yeah. We used to trade years ago. We trade suppressors for ammo. So, it worked out.
Didn't Pete's family used to own a different ammunition company? Is it Corlock?
Corban. Yeah, totally. Yeah. So he used to, he would send me ammo and I'd send him suppressors, or he would order suppressors. And I think he had already traded the manufacturer for the suppressor. And then he would give me ammo to do the trade. And
he never was some.
Yeah. I would see him at the Rapid City gun shows, but yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah, for sure. I know Pete. And then Melissa lives sort of in the middle of the state, kind of near Gregory. And she's sort of a transplant with her husband being here. She moved from, you know, Minnesota to here. So
yeah, and I actually trained in this when I first took this job. My field training, I was actually in Melissa's area where she grew up.
Oh, so wow!
Out of Painesville, Minnesota. So that's where I had to do my field training, and that's kind of how I got to know who Melissa was when I took this job 10 years ago. And then her and I had met a handful of different times at different shows. So at the game fair here in Minnesota.
Yeah.
And then I've met her through my work a couple different times. And then again, seeing her out at your open house with your HQ.
Yeah.
And so re-engaged that conversation with her. So it was kind of interesting to get to see her again. But she's actually going to come out and be our keynote speaker for our banquet this next year, too. So,
oh, hey, good. Perfect. Yeah. She's an excellent speaker. And big hunter all over, got her own TV show. Yeah, she'd be excellent.
Yeah, you know, and be able to talk about your guys' products and stuff like that is what we asked her to do. And then also to just be able to relate, you know, she's a Minnesotan at heart that likes to be outdoors and hunt. And we're hoping that she can share experiences. And we had her on a podcast not long ago. You should listen to it. But just listening to her and her adventures, you know, coming through life and getting her show is pretty awesome.
Oh, cool. I want to go listen to that now. I like her as a person. She's very thorough and buttoned down. It's great. She's been great.
Man, it was so cool because Sean's like, hey, you should go talk to her. I'm like, Sean, I've talked to her several times. I'll go talk to her. That's fine. So I get up to her and I was like, hey, just wondering if I could get your card or your manager's card, whoever, see, talk to you about the banquet. And she literally hands me her business card and goes, here you go. And I said, well, is this your manager? She goes, no, it's me. Just call me. I don't have a manager. Just call me. And I was like, I thought that was amazing, you know, just because just level, you know.
Yeah, totally, 100%.
Yeah. So we're working with Carter and Tori, Brandon, for our bank was going to be March 25th in St. Paul. We're going to do a little VIP over at Best Defense. We got the range to ourselves, and let's see if we can bring up all the suppressors and maybe some of your toys.
Totally.
You know, we'll do a little day at the range.
Definitely. Yeah. Ask him about my MP5 or my Chris Vector full autos. They're definitely or a Glock 18 actually is probably the best.
Yeah. Heck yeah.
Oh, I'll shoot the MP5. It's been a while since
we'd love to invite you up too. If you're free.
Yeah.
You know, March 25th.
Totally.
Yeah.
Dan, you had something to say?
For the people that want to buy a suppressor but have never shot with one, within the states that you guys have the regional managers or the area managers. Do you guys ever host anything where they can go out and test out the products at all?
Yeah, we do. I mean, you know, I would recommend they just call in and ask us. You know, typically in the winter, we're so busy like working shows, but typically when it's a little warmer and it's not as busy, it frees up time and we try to do live events. You know, I think we have like 20 live events on the calendar for this year. That's why I talked about our relationship with Federal. I had to kind of snuggle up and be real nice to them to be able to get ammo, just to be able to afford it and get access to it. But yeah, tell them to call in. We have them. I think we got one like this week in Missouri, and I think next week we're in Savannah. So we do a lot of different, you know, live fire events for people to come out and try, you know, all different silencers and different things we sell, and even things aren't made by us, just whatever people are interested in shooting.
Yeah. Anybody can go on the website under the events and you'll be able to see all the events that are coming up. There's different shows where you can put your hands on all the product and talk to an expert. And you can also, they have, I think the weekend or this weekend is Shoot the Mute or something like that.
Shoot on mute. Yeah. Shoot on mute. There you go. Yep.
Yeah.
Cool. I like it. So I got to tell one last story, and I know Brandon and I talked about it and Sean was there for it, but I thought it was super cool. And I like telling the listeners about it just because it's kind of a like small world when it comes down to it. So I went to high school, well, junior high and high school with an individual named Josh Robinson. Josh Robinson and I were very good friends for several years, and we hung out day in, day out, just very close. I believe Josh is a Boy Scout. I was a Boy Scout, and I think that was the biggest connection we had. We did a bunch of stuff together, and then we graduated high school. We parted ways, and I have not seen Josh in 20 years. So I was driving through Lionel Lakes, Minnesota this last summer, and I went by his family farm, and his family farm was a sod farm. That was kind of what their niche was sod farm. So, and I drove by and I was like, I wonder whatever happened to Josh Robinson. Super, super like disconnected, looked at his Facebook. He hasn't updated it probably in 10 years. Like just, it's just there. So small world, I get invited to come out and hang out at Silent Central for their new grand opening. And I'm walking through and all of a sudden this guy walks by and I'm like, is that Josh Robinson? And I'm like, no way, this can't be right. You know, we're out in Sioux Falls, like no way. And I walk up and he looks at me, goes, Chris Tatro. And I was like, Josh Robinson. Oh my gosh. Like just completely just blows me away. I literally drove by his family farm the week before that, wondering where he was at. And then here we are. And Josh is your chief financial officer for Silent Street Central.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep.
That's just a phenomenal person.
Yeah.
Easy to get along with, very, very smart individual. I totally thought he'd be a politician, but but it fits. So that's pretty cool. I love that story. Josh is a good guy. It's nice to reconnect. So you got a good guy over there.
Oh, thanks, Jeff.
Josh is a good person. So, go ahead, Sean. I'll let you roll.
Well, Brandon, we're getting it's over an hour now. So, if you have any final words that you'd like to tell everybody about Silencer Central, and
no, I mean we're just glad that we had an opportunity to connect with you and your team there at the Hometown Hero, and just been a great opportunity for us to work with you guys. I mean, we typically try to give away a lot of free suppressors to local charities and organizations just to kind of get our name out there. And I feel like that, you guys have done a good job helping us with, we were able to give you charitable stuff and then you guys were able to talk to your folks about it. And it seems like it's been a really, win-win relationship. And we're excited to, be in a position where we can give away stuff to charitable events. And we excited to work with you guys. We appreciate everything you do. And Silencer Central, I feel like we're just trying to get the word out there. If you look at the metrics, there's only probably 1% of people that own firearms actually own suppressors. So there's a big opportunity for us to educate. And, again, we appreciate the partnership with you guys. And if there's anything we can do to help make your life easier, I think it's a win-win. So just, continue to keep in touch with us and let us know how we can help you grow.
Yeah, we appreciate everything that you guys do for us. And I can't believe we went through this whole podcast without mentioning at all the donations that you guys give to us throughout the year. So yeah, it definitely helps Sean bugs people every couple weeks to find events that they can use the gift certificates for.
Good. Perfect.
No, really appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So. Looking forward to the future and watching this company grow and our partnership building for sure.
Yeah. No, we appreciate you being a champion for the relationship too, as well, Sean. We wouldn't have gotten introduced and connected if it hadn't been for you. So we appreciate that.
And if you're looking for a silencer, make sure to go check out their website. We'll link it in the description for the podcast. And we appreciate Brandon, you coming on, spending the last hour with us. Sean, thanks for hopping on and helping out as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you, Brandon. Really appreciate it.
Yeah. And, thanks, guys.
I know you're a busy guy, so tell the wife thank you and the kids thank you. So we really appreciate
They're out watching Nebraska volleyball, so I'm at home alone.
Oh, quiet time.
Yeah. It's perfect. No, I was glad. It was an honor to be on here. So appreciate if you ever have any questions or whatever, just call me. I'd be happy to help you guys.
Awesome. Thank you. And until next time, we'll see you guys out on the water and in the woods.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you for listening to the Hometown Hero Outdoors Podcast. For more information about Hometown Hero Outdoors, visit our webpage at www.hometownherooutdoors.org.